Welcome back to Sometimes Weekly. My name's Nick Butler. It's been 1 year and 1 day since the last entry into Sometimes Weekly, so it's time for another entry. In this episode, I didn't want to do too much, and so I let AI do it for me. I pressed 3 buttons in Google, and it spit out a 20-minute podcast discussing my work over at sometimesweekly.com. In this audio, you're going to hear, it does make some things up, which AI has a tendency to do. For example, in discussing the setting a dress code for a British secret society, it mentions a neon pink outfit that I said that they should wear. I never said that. But otherwise, the discussion is all right, and I think it's interesting to see how AI functions in this new, weird world of ours. But mostly this is an excuse for me to post something and having to do very little to do so. I don't know if that was a sentence. But here we are, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you stories from the back row of history as discussed by artificial intelligence. Enjoy.
So today, we're taking a deep dive into some seriously strange situations. Those kind of stories that make you wonder how one guy keeps ending up in them. We're talking Stories from the Back Row of History by Nick Butler.
Yeah, you know what's so fascinating about Butler's stories is that he's not some, like, big shot. He's just an average guy.
Right, not a household name.
Exactly. But the thing is, he writes for this publication called Sometimes Weekly. And, well, let's just say the name kind of fits the vibe of his stories.
So Sometimes Weekly, not exactly the New York Times or anything. What's the deal with this publication?
Think humor. Think unexpected. Think the kind of stuff you'd stumble upon online and think, no way, this can't be real.
And Butler's stories definitely have that. Wait, did that actually happen? Quality. I mean, we're talking encounters with Donald Trump, not once, but twice, a British lord, Roger Stone. Huh. He even had a brush with North Korean Twitter diplomacy.
Seriously, you get the sense that Butler's not seeking out these situations. They just kind of find him.
Like, he's a magnet for the absurd.
Yeah.
So let's start with the Donald Trump saga. Where do we even begin with that?
Well, picture this. It's Butler's birthday. He's probably expecting, you know, cake, presents, the usual.
Right, the good stuff.
Instead, he gets hit with a cease and desist letter.
Okay, talk about a memorable birthday present. What was the reason for this legal threat? What do you do?
It goes back years, actually. Butler, just out of curiosity, I think, registered the domain name Trump.Foundation.
Okay, so, like, he wasn't squatting on it or anything?
Not really, no. It just had, like, a generic landing page.
And I guess you don't mess with the Trump brand.
Right. And this is actually a pretty good example of how, you know, protective Trump is of his image, his name.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to use, you know, lawyers to enforce that.
So that's the first part of the Trump story. Cease and desist. But then it takes a trip.
Oh, yeah. Big twist. Trump's team actually ends up paying Butler for the domain name.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah. Like,
they bought it from him. I'd assume that's the end of it, right? Problem solved.
Nope. Butler takes the money, I think it was $39.99, and then, get this, creates a new website called TronaldDump.Foundation.
Oh, man, that is bold. So, like, clearly a parody site.
Yeah.
Meant to poke fun at Trump.
Oh, absolutely. And the best part is Trump indirectly funded it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how he reacted when he found out.
Well, we don't know for sure, but it really shows how someone like Butler, you know, kind of an average guy, can use humor and, frankly, some legal smarts to turn a potential lawsuit into, like, a platform. He even calculated how many Trump books or bottles of success cologne he could buy with that $39.99.
Okay, so Trump threatens to sue, then Trump cuts a check, and he funds a website making fun of himself. Amazing. Mm-hmm. What other crazy stuff has Butler gotten himself into?
Well, how about an offer, or maybe a joke offer? It's hard to tell from a British lord.
Whoa, that sounds intriguing. Tell me more.
So there's this running gag in the book about another Nick Butler, but this one's in the UK, and they keep getting each other's emails, you know, mixed up.
Right, I remember reading about that. Classic case of mistaken identity.
Exactly. So Butler gets this email about someone who works for BP, a woman named Nicole Wade. Seems normal enough, right?
Yeah, totally innocent.
But then he gets another email, this time from a Lord Barnes, and he just casually mentions a bribe in relation to BP.
Hold on, a bribe? Was he serious? Like, for real?
That's the thing, it's so hard to tell, even reading the emails.
Wow, so unsettling. Like, it just shows how easily these things, like corruption, can be, you know, discussed, even joked about in certain circles.
Right, exactly. And it makes you wonder, what's really going on behind the scenes? What are we not seeing?
Right, just the tip of the iceberg. So, wait, what did Butler do? Did he, like, respond?
Oh, he did. He kind of throws back a risky counter joke about a bribe, and then nothing. Silence. Lord Barnes never replied.
Whoa, that's creepy. It's like he stumbled onto something he wasn't supposed to know.
Totally. Makes you wonder what Lord Barnes was really thinking. Was the joke? Was he serious? We'll probably never know.
All right, I gotta say, I'm hooked on these stories. What else does Butler have up his sleeve?
Okay, how about this? Butler, the accidental diplomat, strikes up a conversation with North Korea on Twitter.
Wait, what? He got a response from North Korea's official Twitter account.
He did. Just a simple question about their YouTube channel, and boom, they replied.
You're kidding. That's gotta be incredibly rare, right? Especially for, you know, an American.
Super rare. I wouldn't be surprised if that little exchange raised some flags with intelligence agencies.
So, like, one tweet and suddenly you're on a watch list. This is hilarious and terrifying at the same time.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Well, things get even weirder. There's this Japanese blog that investigated Butler, you know, dug into his online activity, and they concluded that his support for North Korea, based on that one tweet, mind you, was indescribably creepy.
That is so strange. It makes you think, are we under suspicion now just for talking about it on this deep dive?
Maybe we should be a little more careful about our online activity. You never know who's watching.
Speaking of things that are a little creepy, did you know Butler almost had his house featured on Paranormal State?
Wait, the show on A&E? With the ghost hunters and all that? No way. How'd that happen?
So picture this. Butler's a teenager, like 14 years old, right? And he writes this fake ghost story for a website. You know, just for fun.
Teenagers, always up to no good, right?
Right. But then, somehow, the producers of Paranormal State find this story,
mm-hmm.
and they reach out to him.
Seriously? Like, wanting to investigate his house?
Yep. Can you imagine the terror? A 14-year-old kid suddenly facing a TV crew and having to explain that he made the whole thing up. So what does he do? He ignores email. For 8 years.
Oh, talk about avoiding a problem. Did he ever respond?
He did, eventually. Confessed that the whole ghost story was a hoax.
What did the producers say? Were they upset?
The producer's response was, and I quote, mind blown. But then, get this, Butler goes silent again. Doesn't respond for another 2 years.
Classic Butler move. Creates chaos and then vanishes. But, you know, his ghost story, it actually says a lot about, like, our media landscape, how eager we are to believe in the paranormal, even when it's just for entertainment.
Absolutely. Fake news before fake news was a thing.
Exactly. So what else has Butler gotten himself into? Ready for another one?
Yeah, hit me with it. What's next?
Okay, so how about accidentally setting the dress code for a super secretive British club?
Wait, you're telling me he influenced the fashion choices of a secret society? How is that even possible?
Remember that other Nick Butler in the UK, the one who keeps getting his emails? Well, happens again. This time, Butler gets copied on an email chain discussing the dress code for the Athenaeum Club. It's this super prestigious private members club in London. Apparently, there's this big debate about whether jackets and ties are required after 6 p.m.
Sounds very British.
Right. So Butler, sensing an opportunity, jumps right into the conversation. He starts suggesting all these stricter rules for dress code violators.
Oh, no. I can already see where this is going.
He even proposes that repeat offenders should have to wear, get this, a neon pink jumpsuit.
Oh, Butler. I can't even imagine how the actual members of this, like, super fancy club reacted to that. Did they respond?
Well, sadly, the email chain went silent after that, so we never found out if Butler's fashion suggestions were taken seriously.
That's too bad. I'd love to see a bunch of distinguished gentlemen sporting neon pink jumpsuits, all thanks to Nick Butler.
Right. It would be quite a sight. But it really shows how even small actions, things we do without thinking, can have these ripple effects that we might never know about.
The butterfly effect, but with fashion choices.
Exactly. And it also shows how even the most traditional, most established institutions can be, you know, disrupted sometimes by pure chance.
Okay, so we've got Trump, a British lord, North Korean Twitter, ghost stories, and now a fashion intervention at a super secret club. Butler's life is, like, way more interesting than mine.
Well, he definitely has a knack for finding himself in unique situations. But his experiences, you know, they also raise some interesting questions about the world we live in. Like, how easy is it to, you know, manipulate systems or exploit loopholes? just for fun.
And it makes you think about, like, our obsession with celebrity and sensationalism. How much of what we see is real and how much is, you know, manufactured or manipulated?
Right. All great questions. And we'll dig into those a bit more as we continue our deep dive. But for now, let's move on to another story, one that kind of highlights the strange world of social media and how our actions online, you know, even those we might think are insignificant, can have long-lasting consequences.
Okay, this sounds juicy. Give me the details.
This one involves Neil Blomkamp, the director of District 9. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, great film. What's the connection to Butler?
So way back in the early days of Twitter, when nobody really knew what they were doing, a teenage Butley snagged the handle at Neil Blomkamp before the real Blomkamp could.
He was like an early Twitter impersonator. That takes guts.
Right. And he even tweeted some like cryptic messages pretending to be Blomkamp.
Oh, that's fantastic. What happened when Twitter finally gave the account to the real Blomkamp?
Butler was actually relieved. It was like he knew he'd been playing with fire. But the story doesn't end there.
Of course not. There's always a twist with Butler.
Years later, consumed by guilt, Butler decides to apologize to Blomkamp. And in typical Butler fashion, he does it publicly on Twitter, tagging the director in his apology.
I bet Blomkamp was surprised to hear from him after all those years. Did he even remember the whole Twitter handle incident?
He did, and he was totally cool about it. Accepted Butler's apology and even joked that he'd been haunted by those early tweets for years.
That's great. So even in the vastness of the internet, our past actions can come back to haunt us. A good reminder to be mindful of our digital footprint, because you never know who might be watching or, you know, how long it might take for those consequences to catch up with you.
Exactly. And it also shows the power of, you know, owning up to your mistakes, even if they happened years ago. Sometimes a simple apology can go a long way.
All right. I think we have time for one last story before we wrap up this part of our deep dive.
Yeah.
What else has Butler gotten himself into?
Well, he's had some interesting, let's call them interactions with Roger Stone.
Roger Stone, the political operative. I've heard some wild stories about him.
Well, Butler, ever the dedicated journalist, tried to get an interview with Stone. He even used one of those paid messaging services where, like, each message costs a few bucks.
Wow, that's commitment to getting this story. So what happened?
After a bunch of increasingly hostile replies from Stone, including being called a traitor and threatened with a lawsuit, Butler finally gets a response. Just two words. Go F-Sharkay yourself.
Oh, wow. That's classic Roger Stone. But did Butler get his interview?
Nope. But honestly, that response is probably more entertaining than any interview he could have gotten.
I think you're right about that. Even in the back row of history, Butler seems to find the most colorful characters.
He does. And his stories, you know, they give us this glimpse behind the curtain. They show us that even seemingly insignificant moments can intersect with these larger events in the most surprising ways.
This has been an incredible journey so far. We've gone from cease and desist letters to Twitter diplomacy, ghost stories, fashion faux pas, and now Roger Stone. I can't wait to see what other gems Butler has hidden in his book.
Oh, there's definitely more to come. In part two, we'll dig a little deeper into what these stories really tell us about power, politics, and, you know, just the human condition.
I'm ready for part two.
You know, it's funny. These stories, they seem so random, but they actually say a lot about the world we live in.
Yeah, like Butler's holding up this, like, funhouse mirror to society. We see these distorted images, but they're still recognizable.
Exactly. Like that whole Trump domain name thing, it's not just a funny story. It actually shows us how trademarks, you know, especially for personal brands, can be used, sometimes aggressively.
Right. Even when there's no, like, bad intention. Butler wasn't trying to scam anyone or anything. He was just curious.
Exactly. But it kind of exposed this vulnerability, you know, how seriously brands, especially personal brands like Trump's, take themselves online.
And then he turns around and creates Tronald Dump Foundation, like turning a potential lawsuit into a platform for satire. That's brilliant.
It really is. And it speaks to this, like, growing role of satire in how we talk about politics, challenging power, pointing out hypocrisy, but also, you know, making people laugh.
Those stories about Lord Barnes and Roger Stone, they also give us this peek into the world of power and influence. Like, what really goes on behind closed doors?
Right. It's kind of unsettling how casually they talk about things like bribes. Even if it was a joke, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, like we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg when it comes to, you know, politics and backroom deals.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have that North Korea incident, which is a perfect example of how, you know, what you do online can have real world consequences. You might not even realize it.
A single tweet. Just asking about a YouTube channel could land you on a watch list. That's a scary thought. Makes you think twice about what you post, you know?
It does. And it also highlights how governments, especially those that are really controlling about information, how they see online engagement.
Butler's almost appearance on Paranormal State.
Yeah.
That one's interesting, too. It says a lot about storytelling, how a story, even a fake one, can just take on a life of its own.
Especially online, where stuff spreads so fast, it's hard to tell what's real and what's not.
And then you have this 14-year-old kid freaking out because of a ghost story he made up, then ignoring the problem for years. I kind of feel for him.
I know, right? But it shows how we get caught up in entertainment, you know, how much we want these stories to be real, even if they're not.
So what about Butler's influence on the Athenaeum Club's dress code? That seems kind of small in comparison, but...
Even small actions can have big consequences. It reminds us that we're all connected, and what we do can affect other people, even in ways we don't expect.
Like that butterfly effect thing, but with jackets and ties.
Exactly. And it also shows how traditions, even those super old, super established ones, can be disrupted, sometimes just by chance.
So if we bring this back to our listener, why should they care about these back row stories? What's the takeaway here?
Butler's experiences show us that history isn't just made by the famous people, the ones we read about in books. It's also shaped by everyday people doing everyday things.
We're all part of history, even if we don't realize it.
Right, and you never know. Maybe some of the things we're doing now, things that seem small or unimportant, could become stories someday. Stories that tell us something about the world.
So we should be paying more attention to those back row moments in our own lives.
Definitely. Butler's stories encourage us to, you know, be more aware of what's happening around us, to find the humor in the absurd, and to realize that anyone, even an average guy, can end up in extraordinary situations.
And that we all have the power to make a difference, even if it's just by making someone laugh with a story about, you know, getting a cease and desist letter from Donald Trump.
Exactly. But there's also a cautionary side to Butler's experiences. Like, they show how important it is to think critically, to question what we see and hear.
Especially nowadays, with all the information overload, it's easy to just accept whatever we see on the news or on social media. But Butler's stories remind us to, you know, take a step back, think for ourselves.
Absolutely. And they also show the power of humor, you know, satire, parody, even just a good joke. It can make people think, it can start conversations, sometimes even more effectively than a serious argument.
Butler's stories are definitely doing that. But before we move on to the last part of our deep dive, there are a few more stories I want to touch on. They all kind of show this theme of Butler ending up in these bizarre situations.
Oh, yeah. Those are some good ones. Each one is like a little nugget of absurdity.
Remember that don't approve this super PAC story. It's crazy how easy it was for him to start a political action committee, even though the name was ironic and he basically admitted he had no idea what he was doing.
It really shows you how our political system, you know, it can be kind of absurd. How easy it is to, you know, get involved, for better or worse.
And then there's the time Fox News accidentally promoted Butler's fake Trump dating site. And people actually applied.
It's almost too perfect. It shows how, you know, media can create these echo chambers where people just believe what they want to believe. And it highlights how important it is to think critically about what you see online.
Then we have his apology to Neil Blomkamp 13 years after stealing his Twitter handle. It's a story about taking responsibility for your actions, even online.
Yeah, our digital footprint, it can last a long time. And it's always worth it to, you know, own up to your mistakes, even if it's years later.
All these stories, they add to our understanding of Butler's experiences and what they tell us about the world.
They're funny, yeah. But they also make you think about power, about politics, about media, about what it means to be human. About what it means to be human. About what it means to be human. Human.
I'm definitely ready to explore those deeper themes as we move on to the final part of our deep dive. So we've spent this whole deep dive exploring Nick Butler's stories from the back row of history.
Yeah, from cease and desist letters, accidental Twitter diplomacy.
Ghost stories, fashion faux pas, even a memorable encounter with Roger Stone.
Definitely a wild ride.
But what's the bigger picture here? What can we actually learn from Butler's experiences? What do these random encounters tell us?
That's the big question, isn't it? I think one of the most important things to remember is that history isn't just about the big names, the big events, the stuff you read in textbooks.
It's about everyday people like Butler, stumbling into these bizarre situations, often hilarious ones.
Exactly. And his stories kind of remind us that we're all part of this big unfolding story, even if we're not, you know, the main characters.
We all have a role to play in history, even if we don't realize it at the time.
Right. And even the smallest actions, the things that seem insignificant, can have these ripple effects, you know, consequences that we might never even know about.
It's like that saying, you can't step in the same river twice, because everything's always changing, everything's connected.
Exactly. And Butler's experiences also show us how important it is to think critically, especially in this world where we're bombarded with information all the time.
It's so easy to get caught up in the headlines or what's trending on social media.
But Butler's stories remind us to take a step back, you know, to question what we see and hear, to not just accept things at face value.
They also show how powerful humor can be.
Yeah. Satire, parody, a well-timed joke. It can expose hypocrisy, challenge authority, and start important conversations.
And Butler's stories do all of that.
Yeah.
They make us laugh, but they also make us think.
Exactly. And another thing that struck me was this recurring theme of unintended consequences.
Right, like registering a domain name out of curiosity and ending up with a cease and desist letter.
Or accidentally influencing a British club's dress code.
It shows that we don't always have control over the outcomes of our actions, no matter how small or insignificant they may seem.
And it also highlights how interconnected everything is.
Right. Like you do one thing, and it can set off a chain of events that you could never have predicted.
Exactly. And then there's the element of chance, you know, being in the right place at the right time, or maybe the wrong place at the wrong time, depending on your perspective.
Butler definitely seems to have a knack for finding himself in those situations where the ordinary and the extraordinary collide.
His stories challenge our assumptions about what's possible. They remind us that life is full of surprises.
And that sometimes the most interesting stories come from the back row, the unexpected corners where we least expect to find them.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Nick Butler's world,
I'm left with a sense of wonder, you know, and a renewed appreciation for the power of storytelling.
His anecdotes are more than just funny stories. They're glimpses into the human experience.
They make us laugh, they make us think, and they leave us with this lingering question. What are our back row stories? The stories that are waiting to be told.
Right. What seemingly insignificant moments in our lives might one day reveal something profound about ourselves or about the world around us.
That's something for all of us to think about. If you're looking for a book that's funny, insightful, and full of unexpected twists and turns, I highly recommend Nick Butler's Stories from the Back Row of History.
It's a great reminder that life is full of surprises, and that sometimes the most ordinary moments can turn into extraordinary stories.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
And until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep laughing at the absurdity of it all.